In this episode of The Coach's Trail, Schmitty and Sardog talk about excellence and mindfulness in relationships and how these things can be great attractors for us to create the relationships that we truly want and learn about ourselves along the way. So stick around and let's get started. Welcome to The Coach's Trail, Season 2, Episode 4. I'm your host, Sardog, and we've got Schmitty on the line. You want to say hi, Schmitty?
What is up, everybody? I am in a zen, calm, and excited place today.
Well, that's just good because we had Jeff Warren on, and we'll talk about that in a minute. This podcast is devoted to giving young adults college age tools, mindsets, and things to just chew on to have a really beautiful, amazing life. So we have guests on, and Schmitty and I toss the ball around, the proverbial ball, to get at concepts. And today we're going to talk about mindfulness, excellence, and relationships. And, you know, we usually do a coach's calibration, but because we just about 20 minutes ago got off the line with Jeff Warren, meditation expert, although he wouldn't call himself that probably, you know, we're calibrated. So I'm feeling very in on purpose in the moment. Schmitty, how you doing?
Yeah, it's great. I loved how you say we kind of throw out some things for people to chew on. Also, like there was these tools. But sometimes it's like we got the small ball and then we got these big concepts, right? And it's like, I love the idea of small ball, big ball, right? Because sometimes we don't get to have those bigger conversations, which isn't always so tangible. And when we can do that, that often can lead to, oh, now I got to go do this concrete thing and I can do it with more ease once I'm calibrated, once I'm settled.
Yeah. And sometimes you need those big balls just to make stuff happen, you know? So it's really awesome. Good stuff.
Trust your gut on that one.
Yep. So we're going to go over to the segment called Big Sofa. And I'm going to turn that one over to you because that's your brainchild. Then we'll go to the stress shop and then we'll chew on the content of the day and then we'll be out.
Love that outline. Big Sofa, what the heck was I talking about? I'm going to have to listen back to that. Listeners, help me out. Phone in, phone a friend, text me. No, the big was what we were just talking about, the big concepts. And people like Jeff Warren, who we just had on, AJ, but John Wooden is the people I've talked about in the past. I mean, big leaders, Nelson Mandela, right? Just solved a little thing like apartheid, you know, racial injustice in South Africa. What can we learn from those people? And if we don't sit still on the sofa and look at their insight, read up on it, listen to what they have to say, how would we know? And then so was S-O-W was, you know, what can we do to be successful with those principles, with those things they taught us? But what I didn't bring into the equation was the fa, you know, the F word. And that was, you know, actually initially it was P-H-A, you know, because so like fat, you know, how that used to be a thing. That's not a thing anymore, but P-H, you know. And the P stood for practice because, you know, I can sit here on the sofa and we can talk about these things, but if I don't put it into practice myself, it's, you know, it's just an idea. And Jeff talked about that too. Right. And then, you know, it just makes it experiential for myself. And the HA was for happy, healthy. It was those reminders of those big fulfillment type things versus getting caught up in some accomplishment. That's like, oh, I'm going to do this so I can win a game. If I'm coaching, for example. Or I'm going to do this project so that I can, you know, end up with this, you know, this money out of this, right? You know, which we all need our livelihood, our needs met, but not losing sight of those bigger picture pieces. And I'll give a soccer example. So I'm sitting on the big sofa right now, and we're in soccer season in the fall, and I'm working with a local high school, great group of guys. I'm the assistant coach. Another coach is, you know, kind of running out front because I got a couple things going on. So I kind of come in from the background. And one of the things I help them do is actually get super technical because he's got the vision of like tactics and like this, we're going to be playing this team this week. And this is how our strategy is going to be. And like all that will fall apart if we can't technically execute, like you got to have the skills. And one of the core skills, which is the toughest one, is stopping. It's like zero is a speed. So if you look at the best players in the world, like Lionel Messi and Ronaldo, these are some big names, professional world. And one of the things they can do better than any other players is change speed, change direction with their head up. But the players at Keene High, they can do that too. And so it's like, but it all starts with, can you stop? And that's not comfortable. Because once you stop, guess what? Now you're facing a defender or a potential challenge. And that stopping, you know, is kind of like, well, can I start again? That's kind of my big takeaway, is that skill, and to cross that over into mindfulness or life's or relationships, that's not easy. That's stopping. But if we practice, you know, we can learn a lot. And listening is probably a big piece of that when we cross over to relationships. So anyway, that's my big sofa thought for the day.
I love that. It's amazing. I love it. And I love that it's an analogy or an acronym for, you know, just galvanizing our attention towards certain principles, right? Like happiness or practice. You're right. It does take intentionality. It takes learning, but then it takes putting it into practice. Kind of like what Jeff Warren was saying, practice comes in many ways too. You don't have to just sit on a cushion to meditate. You know, you could be playing a sport even, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the end of the podcast. So just to shift into the stress shop, my friend, talk about the stress shop, because we're all going to feel stressed. And what we need to do is stop, like you said, go to zero, change directions, and put it in the shop. Instead of putting it out in the world in a negative way, we turn it and we put it on the laboratory to inspect. So, you know, this week, thinking about what stressors have come up, we're going to talk about our close relationships. But in my class, you know, I've been teaching meditation the last couple of days in my class, and it's, you know, maybe because Jeff was coming on our podcast, it kind of inspired me to do that. But, and I'm a longtime meditator, but as I do this and teach these young adults meditation, they realize like, wow, this is hard. This is hard work. And I don't realize, well, I do realize how stressed out I am. And as I do stop, I realize, oh my gosh, my mind is like going a million miles an hour and I don't know quite how to tame this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really uncomfortable. And that was about a third of the class that had this experience, you know? So, and at the same time, like this stopping, like you're talking about on the big sofa, is the very thing that we need to be able to shift directions when we're stressed out, right? This is the thing that we need to be able to just take a couple deep breaths, kind of find what Jeff Warren called our inner resources, our deeper resources, and like inspect what we're stressed about and try to turn that into self-awareness and some productivity. And so it was really interesting conversations we had just to have people look at their stress as if they're kind of looking at it from afar instead of just being commingled with it. You know, so just stepping back, it was really, really interesting.
Yeah, you brought up something for me, dude, that I remembered. The guy who made the Headspace app, he's got a TED Talk, and it's Andy something. I can't think of his last name. But one of his little spiels on there was talking about training a wild stallion, like what they actually do when they catch a wild stallion. And it's not lasso it and try to hold it still right away. They actually put it in a huge, you know, acres and acres of fenced in area and just let it be in that space. And then they make it a little bit smaller and they make it a little bit smaller. And then he gets used to that new environment. That's what was coming up for me when you're like, everything's running wild. I think that was the wild crossover, right? But you don't just try to like stop that all in one swift motion and crush it. So,
well, yeah. And as Jeff said, it's like, it's all about observation. And as you can see something, now you're not so identified with it. So you've corralled it a little bit more, you know, because it is so wild. It's like, remember that thing from the 80s, you hit it and it's a bobblehead and it's like, kind of how we do. We get so stressed out and in our head that we lose that sense of our body. Like we actually inhabit a body. So we're so toppy and we're breathing shallow and it's like, and all these discursive thoughts are going through our brain, analog style. And it's just like all jumbled up. You know, we got to step back and say like, what's going on, and corral the beast. And that's what a practice like meditation does. And so I've been teaching that with my class, and it's been really, really amazing to even just do 5 minutes of this with them, because it's new and they're seeing already a benefit to it.
And I think that talking out afterwards is helpful too, right? Like, so you're doing that with community. Right. Like, so I know on my own, it's harder, whereas I do a little bit of that meditation and then I talk to you or hear from students. I was like, oh, wow. So you can have that, you know, shared experience. Love it.
Well, hence the segue into excellence and mindfulness and relationships. Again, we're going to talk about Jeff Warren. You know, one of his special powers is to facilitate a community, and even a large community, because there's such collective one energy to keep us focused, but collective wisdom where we all experience this thing a little bit differently. And so, you know, when we talk about excellence in relationship, like who are those people on our trail that help us be that mindful, happy, kind of put together, if that makes sense, in person?
Yeah. No, fulfilled people. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. That's what I was thinking when you were saying all those words. All those words made sense to me. There's certainly, I mean, I do the Do Nothing Project on Sunday nights probably. And this is a cool thing, like two or three times a month, or maybe sometimes once a month. It's interesting to note, like, I'm not perfect at that, you know? And we talked about this, when I do make time for my morning routine to actually sit 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or I do make time on Sunday night to do that, or I go to Morning Sun probably about once a month, a mindfulness community, that pays dividends. Like we talked about, that has these benefits for the rest of the week, for my health, but really my relationships, which is what we wanted to jump into. So I don't know if you want to go first or you want me to talk first. So yeah, I mean, basically, even with all this understanding of this, I had kind of slipped off my practice a little bit, still practicing meditation pretty regularly, but my wife and I were just, you know, it's busy right now. We've started up the school year, I'm coaching, our children are going to school hybrid, so some days they're home, some days they're at school. It's just a lot of chaos, which brings, like you said, stress, you know, and we get in these moments where we're trying to figure those things out, and we just reach this point in gridlock. Like, we were not seeing it the same way. We were both trying to figure it out. It was like this little waves, right? We'd be like, oh yeah, we see it the same way. And then 30 seconds later, boom, conflict. And it was just a day and a half thing, right? It kept rolling. Is I wasn't able to step back from it. I was in there, like, I wasn't even trying to necessarily be right, because that's been the case in the past. Like, I have to be right. I was not right there, but it was like, I couldn't be settled and, you know, okay with the direction it was going. And then finally it released afterwards, you know, we're back and things are fine now. But it was like, I could see I could have benefited from using a little bit of mindfulness, you know, going and sitting down for 10 minutes and just saying, stop trying to do that. Just come back to my breath.
Well, how did you come around? Because I had a similar interesting experience with my wife recently, where we had some disconnection, some tension, and I became defensive and, you know, didn't want to have the conversation that she wanted to have at that time. And instead of saying that, I became defensive and snarky because I was frustrated and annoyed that, you know, she wanted to have this particular conversation that she was blaming me for something. And so I felt on the hot seat. And so defensiveness came up, snarkiness came up, we amped up a little bit. But then, you know, again, I caught myself because that's not the result I want. And so I needed to step back, and I ended up going down into the kitchen and actually meditating in my kitchen, breathing and refocusing. Because, you know, when we're heightened, we're full of adrenaline and our thoughts are racing. And again, like you said, we want to be right because now we're triggered. We have to defend something,
man. When I go into my kitchen, man, I grab the cookies and milk, so I can't go there. And that's a good thing that I should grab, because who knows what else I could grab in there. But I think having a space, like you said, to know getting space, that's what's coming up for me, right? And I was not getting that. And what I did first, it's funny because you always do that for us, I think, in a great way. I think that's one of your strengths, man, is asking those questions. That I could just, like, even in this combo, I could just kind of run right past it. And when I'm really getting technical and like, oh, what did I do? I so needed the answer. I was more in problem solving mode. And I went to a reading. I went to one of John Gottman's, you know, he's a great helper of, you know, marriage counselor, many years of research and experience. And he talked about when we're in gridlock and that 60 to 70%, they say, of marital problems are not solvable. Now that's a stat. So what are we supposed to do with that? But the point was, we'll stop fighting that if they're not solvable. That's our personality conflicts, right? The way we were both going about it. So, but to recognize that, right? That recognition. So that reading of that made me more aware. So there was a coach. And then I was able to get more mindful myself. But until basically someone kind of told me, stop fighting that, Matt. It's kind of what I needed, right? And I didn't remember that until you kind of hit me a little harder there.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll take it a step further. As we were having this tension and I was calming down, she came down like 10 or 15 minutes later, and I was definitely in a calmer space. And I said to her, like, you know, are we okay? Are you okay? And then that brought us into like engaging about what just happened. Right. And she said, you know, you got defensive, you know, and can you own that? And at first I was like, no, you know, that means that I'm wrong, you know, or something like that. But I'm like, yeah, I can see that. And she goes, can you see how you were snarky because you were defensive? And I'm like, and part of me wanted to be like, yeah, but if you wouldn't have just brought that up, it kind of pummeled me with it. But that, she's like, yes, okay, that, but I'm talking about you right now. You're trying to pass the buck. And I'm like, damn, man, this is like the hot seat, right? And like really taking my medicine, as we say on the golf course, like you hit it in the, out in the weeds, and if you don't have a shot, you got to take a drop, just take your medicine. Don't try to hack it out of the weeds, right? Sometimes you got to take your lumps and it's bruising to your ego. You know, maybe for me, it was just like, it did feel like I was giving something up to actually acknowledge that. And I need to explore that a little bit, but it was raw and it was real. And that led us into her saying, you know what? I could have addressed that. I could have asked you if it was a good time. I could have blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, cool, we both have some learning out of here.
I love all that. I think there's the subtlety in relationships that we can go to the research and we can go to experts and we can ask our friends. But sometimes we got to just have these conversations where we don't know exactly what was going on because we know that's going to be true, and dive into the excellence of that, right? Being raw about it, putting this out there, because I think that'll help others, because we're human. So we're going to run into this conflict. I think about students. I see it here at Keene State, right? There's roommate conflict. There's best friend conflict. And there's all these different things for that. And when we're in that conflict, it's tough to tease all that mess of emotions and goals and things going on. Like, that's just...
That it feels intractable. And maybe sometimes it is. But what you just totally inspired me is what happened for me was, I was in the kitchen really calming down, is I got very clear about my outcome. So instead of being right, I wanted to actually have a connection. And so on that shift, like you said, in your big sofa, I stopped and I pivoted and I went in a different direction where I really want to be connected. And what skill or what thing do I need to do to facilitate that outcome? One is to stay calm and really try to check in with her, validate her feelings, also validate where I was coming from, but like elevate the conversation in a very almost gentle way.
No, I love that. And you just challenged me to think about my outcomes, because we did get clear on them, but not super clear. We were both super stressed and we could both help each other with our stress. But because we were both wound in our own stress so much, we weren't in that moment. So we weren't the solution for each other's stress in that moment. So once we step back, and who knows, a variety of things happen. I just told you one of them. We probably connected with friends, you know, other things happen. Then once things were settled, we came back and we did have that end commitment to say, hey, we can help each other. So, I mean, we set up this whole week different based on that, right? Like slowing things down, not trying to do as much, getting back to the things that spark intimacy for us. We're like, when's the last time we had a little coffee date? We need that back in there. So lots of things.
Well, you know, how do we make that real, right? Because everyone out there listening knows what it's like to be in conflict. And yet most people want an excellent relationship. And, you know, it takes two to tango, I say. And luckily, I have a partner who is able to own her stuff, too. And we can have these conversations. She can point stuff out to me. I can point stuff out to her. And we can sometimes have this kind of messy conflict, but come through it and trust that we're going to be able to work this out. And it's not like an ultimatum. If you don't agree with me, then we're getting divorced, or, you know, something like that, right? So I think people listening can relate to that they want excellent relationships. And yet, how are they contributing to, or how are you, the listener, contributing to part of the dysfunction? For me, I was defensive and then I became, you know, condescending or snarky. That does not make an excellent relationship. That wasn't my most excellent moment. But now that I see it, maybe next time I can actually do something different, because that's what I want, is actually excellence in connection.
I love that. And I like that you use the word dysfunction, and I'll flip it around to just share like kind of the tangibles. I think we typically try to do that at the end. What could you do? Try to, you know, make this concrete is throughout your week. And I like the word contributing also. What are the little functional things, meaning going out for a cup of coffee, right? You know, the things that you're putting in the tank in advance, going for a walk together, you know, playing some kind of game, you know, something, you know, doing something together, reading, whatever it is, whatever your activity, soup du jour is, right? But have you made time for that? Because certainly we know, and taking time for yourself. I loved how you said owning, right? Have you made that time to reflect, journal, meditate? Because if you're not doing those two things, and when the stress conflict comes, as you say, it's going to, if we haven't put that other in the bank, then we're certainly, the problem on the big sofa is going to be big. Or feel big, because it might feel bigger than it actually is.
Exactly. No, that's well said. I love that. And there are so many different things you can do, even like a massage or a touch or a kind comment. You know, it could be a gift, some flowers or some chocolate or, you know, favorite book, whatever it is. Like, you know, putting, and I love it, putting it in the tank, making deposits, not just withdrawals, right? And the more money you have in the bank, the more you have to draw from when there is that tension, when there is that, so that you have a solid foundation. You know, that's what we need to do. So I think that's great. That's a good action. Is how can you fill the tank for someone out there that in a relationship that you really want to be excellent?
Love it, man. I think that's a good thing to send the trail team out with.
Beautiful. All right, folks, until next time, peace.
Later, guys.